Welcome to One Place, Many Voices, a podcast inspired by Many Voices, One Nation. Today with me to talk about circus history in Pinellas County is someone who is circus royalty, Debbie Carson. Welcome to studio.
Thank you, Nanette Weiser. I appreciate being here.
So, Deb, you have lived in Pinellas County for how long now?
Well, probably from 19, we moved to Florida in 1991. We moved to Pinellas County in 2001. So that's a very long time.
A very long time. And you were with the Palladium. You went to Eckerd College. You graduated with a Florida history.
Studies
with Gary, studying with Gary Mormino. Mm-hmm. And that was not your first encounter with Florida, because as a little girl, you used to come to Sarasota to see your uncle. So you really actually are circus royalty. Tell us a little bit about that, about coming down to Florida with your family.
Well, on my maternal side, my grandmother and grandfather were coming to Florida to live because my great uncle Albert, my grandmother's brother, was invited after traveling with circuses for a while. In 1949, he was invited by Ringling to become part of the clown elite, Clown Alley elite with Ringling Brothers. And so he moved into a lot of the circus performers moved into mobile homes in Sarasota. They dotted all over Sarasota County because, of course, the circus home was in Sarasota, then in Venice. But anyway, we would come as family when we were little kids coming from Baltimore. Every year our family would have our family vacation in Sarasota, and we would visit with our great uncle Albert with Ringling. We would go to the winter quarters in Venice and watch the circus rehearse and play with the animals and watch the clowns and talk to all of the performers. And that was our December vacation for probably 12 years. So I always count Sarasota as a second home, but at any more, it's as much Florida is as much a longtime home for me as any place that I've lived. And I've lived a lot of places.
And you actually wrote this book, Becoming Flo, A Mostly True Story. And there's an adorable picture on the back of you and your sister, Sue, who are made up like clowns, and with Uncle Albert. But I want to, before we talk about the book, Deb, mm-hmm. I want to talk about the fact that, and we've asked you to come in today because you have some big news in time for Circus Day in April about the audio version of your book. But there really is a history in Pinellas County of the circus. Can you share this with us? Because you've done a lot of research on this, and I'd like you to tell our listeners all about this.
Well, it's pretty interesting. I was even surprised myself how much history there was in Pinellas, because you think of circus and you think of Ringling, you think of Sarasota. And of course, there's a lot going on in Sarasota with the Ringling Museum. There's a whole community, and there are generations that still today live in Sarasota that are descended from circus performers
like
with
Willenda.
Ringling from the 20s.
Right. The Willenda brothers, Willenda family.
Oh, the Willendas, the Dolly Jacobs, who is Lou Jacobs. Lou Jacobs was a clown and a compatriot and a very dear friend of Albert's. And he started with Ringling in the 20s and I believe into the 80s. He also started the Ringling Clown College so that they could continue developing circus talent, because it was starting to diminish after a while.
So back to the history in Pinellas County.
The Feld family, which still to this day owns Ringling, the Feld family purchased Ringling from the Ringling family itself in 1927. And that moved the winter quarters from the Ringling family from Baraboo, Wisconsin, to Sarasota, Florida, 1927.
Wow.
Now, when did there start being shows in Florida? Probably not long after that, but it was a very different thing. I mean, as you can imagine, back then, the travel was very different. They traveled in circus wagons across the country, and circus was a huge entertainment option for most of the families in the country. There wasn't television at the time. A lot of people, there was live theater, but sometimes it was very bawdy in these small pioneering towns. There was maybe not even radio for most of these families. So circus was huge. It was the biggest form of entertainment in America in the early 20th century. So now here in Pinellas, the very first show that played in St. Petersburg was on November the 16th, 1953, possibly at an outdoor field in Woodlawn Park, where they played two shows on Friday, December 2nd. And at that location later, we could see that there was another performances in 1955. So it was spotty. They didn't continually play the same towns, and St. Pete was among those that were not among the regular stops. But in the 50s, it was starting to become more prevalent. And so by 1966, Ringling's biggest show yet, because of course it kept growing and growing, it had its very opening show. Of course, the Winter Quarters was in Venice. St. Petersburg was the very first town that they would open for the season. And they opened in 1966 in January. That's when the season starts for Ringling, traditionally, in the beginning of the year, right after New Year's. They played at St. Petersburg's Bayfront Center. And for those of you who don't remember what the Bayfront Center was, it is actually the plot of land, and it was a building where the Dolly Museum is located today. So from the 1960s and well into the 1980s, the circus would perform their season premiere at Bayfront Center every year in St. Petersburg.
And it was really a tradition when snowbirds would come down and the locals, it was a tradition.
Absolutely.
I remember the elephants would be in there and they would be shoveling behind them, right? So, well, I mean, it's incredible to me that this was just the 60s into the 80s.
Yeah.
Downtown was not really
a thing then, right? It really wasn't. And of course, you know, St. Pete downtown really didn't get started until what was the Vinoy.
Right.
After the wars and whatnot. There was interest in that property. So this was from the 60s to the 80s in St. Pete, mm-hmm. at Bayfront Center. And, of course, then Ringling was traveling the circus by train. So in 1984, there was a 43-car Ringling train that brought as many as 100 animals, elephants and giraffes and horses and tigers and camels and bears and more.
Oh, my.
300 people, of which about 137 were performers. The workers who are called in circus lingo the roustabouts, the advance men, which were the PR men, which would promote the show, they would carry 24,600 yards of ropes and wires used to set up the show inside the buildings.
Wow.
Now, I want to point out that number was even bigger in the Big Top days when they would present the shows outside. They would have to also bring all of the tents and the construction for the midway. And these circuses would perform in towns. They would come into the town one day and sometimes and set up, and the next day they would leave. It was an amazing labor-intensive production, not to mention the performance itself. Well, one of the things that Ringling did, because it was as practical as it was fantastic, they decided that to really enhance the show and attract people to the show, there was this thing called Circus Day, and it wasn't relegated to St. Pete, but of course, it happened in St. Pete. So in St. Pete, the trains arriving for the show would park in the rail yard, and that rail yard was located on 22nd Street between 13th and 22nd Avenues North. And as it was in every town, the Circus Day Parade would begin about 11:30 in the morning. They would unload all of the animals, followed by all of the performers, followed by all the workers. And then at noon, they would begin the parade, which was here in St. Pete. They would walk along 13th Avenue to 16th Street South, to 1st Avenue South, east to Bayshore Drive South, and then on to the Bayfront Center, where they would set up the show. But it was like a big parade, so people would line the streets, and they would have a chance to really get excited about the circus being in town. So Circus Day was really big always, in the smallest towns and the biggest towns, and it was like a 4th of July. It was big in the really small towns early on, because it would be like 4th of July. They would close businesses. They would close schools. It was a big celebration. So what happened? Why the Bayfront Center, we know, closed up? Where did they go? what happened? Well, there are a lot of market pressures on American circuses. They began with widening entertainment options, including way back when in the, you know, in the teens and 1920s, the silent films that then became the talkies. Then there was radio. Television came up, and then large-scale theatrical productions, including, for the first time, big Broadway musicals. And now, in the age of the internet, that also took its toll. There were ever-increasing labor and production costs as the time went on. It's a big, big show, very labor-intensive. And then, more recently, there became the direct competitors, which were sexier in a lot of people's eyes than the traditional circus. So Cirque du Soleil would come out, and they would play the area on a regular basis, typically in Tampa. So competition and other pressures, including from animal rights groups who provided challenges to the circuses, who had all of these exotic and very large animals that needed quite a lot of care, in addition to the training. All of those things led to Ringling's eventual announcement that they were going to close. So after 146 years, their final show, they said, was going to be May 21st, 2017. And that last show occurred at the Nassau Veterans Memorial Coliseum in Long Island, New York. Ringling retired all of its elephants even before that in 2016. And those elephants are another interesting thing for, not exactly St. Pete, but close enough to St. Pete, at the Myakka Elephant Ranch just east of Sarasota. You can go and make an appointment, and you can view the elephants, that used to be part of the Ringling Show, where they're now living out their lives at this Myakka Elephant Center, Myakka Elephant Ranch. Public is welcome to that, and it is by appointment only. The early 2020s, we all thought Ringling was closed up. Nope. It announced in 2020 that it would reopen, but this time without the animals. And more disappointing to me, as well as a lot of other people, no clowns. How can you have a circus without animals and without clowns? Well, Ringling is doing it, so they're focusing on human talents this time, acrobatics and aerial feats. They're utilizing more technology and much more interactive performances. So when did they open here? Well, they did not come back to St. Pete, but their very first premiere of the reimagined Ringling Circus opened, and I guess it was something of a soft opening. They wanted to see how things would go. It had been a six-year hiatus, so their first performance was on September the 29th, 2023, at the Berkshire Grocery Arena in Bossier City, Louisiana. They then were honing the performances and casting new people and hiring new people, and it wasn't until January 5th, 2024, that it returned to our area, Tampa Bay, with six performances at that time, the Amalie Arena in Tampa. And it didn't return again to our area until January of this past year, 2026, at the same venue, but now called the Benchmark International Arena. So that's pretty much the history. Now, I will say the Feld family, who I will remind you that I said at the beginning, bought from the Ringling brothers in 1927, the circus. The Feld family still continues to own and operate the Ringling Circus, as it has for all of these years. The winter quarters, when they closed up in Venice, they actually bought a huge plot of land in Palmetto, which is just north of Bradenton, and that's where it continues to operate today.
Deb, that is just wonderful. Thank you so much. You can tell that your master's work and your radio work previously has...
I'm trading on all of my good research
all
skills.
Your superpower is just about everything. So in a nutshell, tell us about Flo, who is your uncle, an Orthodox Jew of devout parents who fled Russian pogroms to Baltimore. 16-year-old Abraham Isidore Meyerowitz ran from a murderously abusive, homophobic father in 1920 joined a traveling circus, adopted the less ethnic Albert White as his stage name, and within the safe harbor of Ringling's circus family, found fame and herself. So give us a brief history of the book. And, I mean, Flo traveled to Cuba. He traveled, he was part of the greatest, with Kirk Douglas in the movie. Tell us a little bit about,
well,
about the book.
Let me, I'll explain one quick thing. I knew the person who I knew all of my living life until Uncle Albert died in 1974 was my Uncle Albert. And he kept his stage name that he had changed from his birth name. His birth name was his birth name was Abraham Isidore Meyerowitz. And that's the Meyerowitz family that is my maternal side. He changed his name when he first joined circus in 19, just shortly after, when he was 16, because a Semitic name like that would not have passed muster with the owners of circuses then, with the ticket-buying public. So like a lot of those in the entertainment field who had very ethnic last names, they changed them. So I knew Uncle Albert as Albert White, as did his fans and his friends. Now, he passed away in 1974. I learned the rest of the story as I was working on my master's in the 2010s to the 2012. What happened was this. He did run away from home at age 16. His father was quite homophobic and a not very nice person. And Albert felt like if he doesn't run away from home, his father truly is going to kill him. So he felt like he had no choice. This story started when I was in grad school, and it started out as a film treatment because I've always seen it as a very cinematic story. I wrote the film treatment, and then as my master's, I wrote it with my with Gary Mormino, who was my chair for my master's degree program at USF St. Pete. Said, go ahead and write your book. That'll be your master's thesis. So I wrote the book with the lovely woman that I'm sitting across from, who was a masterful editor, from the thesis, bringing it to fruition, and publishing in 2021 as the book. The book has been out since 2021. In 2024, I really wanted to make the book much more widely available. And so it is now online and for sale in a refreshed third printing, along with an ebook on any online bookseller and brick and mortar seller that you can imagine.
And an audiobook.
And I always had it in the back of my mind to sort of complete the trilogy, if you will, if I can use that term. To complete the trilogy, it was always in my head to write the audiobook. And I also wanted to voice the audiobook. It has been it's been a labor of love and a very long labor of love.
It's out
more
now,
than
right?
A year.
It's available now?
It is not available yet. Pre-orders will start on April the 9th and then on April the 18th to coincide with World Circus Day around the world. April 18th is World Circus Day. It will be available for sale.
So it's wonderful news. So Deb, tell us, I would like to have three quick stories about your uncle and his circus royalty experience.
As I said, Uncle Albert is the person that I knew. So when I refer to my uncle, I say he. When I refer to the person that I found out 40 years after he passed away, he lived within the safe harbor of his circus family as Flo, the woman he had always thought himself to be. So I learned of Flo 40 years after he passed away. But that is who my Uncle Albert was and always thought she was.
So he dressed as a, portrayed as a female, and he had a fabulous costume designer that he was a Hollywood designer that designed for him. Can you tell us about that?
He created a lot of his costumes, but in 1952, when Cecil B. DeMille worked with the Felt family to do the 1952 Best Picture, Academy Award-winning picture, Greatest Show on Earth, they hired the very famous Hollywood and Broadway designer Miles White to design all of the clothes for the film and all of the clothes subsequently for a couple of seasons hence. Albert Flo, Flo and Miles White became very friendly. They were both interested in fashion and design. And so from that point, and I think even maybe a little bit before, Flo with Ringling never wore anything but female costumes. Some of them were exaggerated to be funny. Some of them were incredibly exotic, incredibly complex to design and wear. But that is from Miles White. They were so good at this design and all of these really intricate costumes that they snuck Flo up atop the top of the circus parade that goes around all of the three rings at the beginning of the show. Think of it like the introduction to an opera program where you hear all of the music. You see all of the performers in all of their costumes, all of the animals that would go around with lots of music. It's called the SPEC, and it stands for spectacular. It's the Circus Spectacular. The prettiest girl, traditionally, was always the one that the performers themselves, voted to put up atop of the biggest float atop the elephant to lead the circus spec. Miles White snuck Flo up not once, but twice. And so when you see there's a little inset on the cover of the book, on the ebook, on the audiobook, there's a little inset of Flo in her, I think it was a Mother Goose, it was a very intricate Mother Goose outfit, and she proudly was sitting atop the spec float, leading the parade, unbeknownst to the fans. They just thought it was the most beautiful woman sitting atop the elephant.
Absolutely wonderful. Deb, we're going to talk more about you, and you're going to be back to do some other interviews with us as part of this One Place, Many Voices. You, Margot Hammond, Beth Gelman, will be sharing the oral histories of Pinellas County. We want to congratulate you on the audiobook coming out.
Thank you so much.
I'm sure there'll be another talk or two that you'll be doing. I know last year you were involved with USF for their literary writers conference, and mm-hmm. that was wonderful. You've done your multimedia show at Eckerd College. So folks, if you want to book Deb for Becoming Flo and talking about her book and see her amazing multimedia presentation, how can they get in touch with you, Deb?
That's called The Flo Show, and you can go to my website, which is debcarsonwrites.com, and there is lots of information about how to reach me, contact me if you want me to come and do what serves as my book talk. It's a performed show with 109, it's music. It's got 109 very colorful photographs, even audio clips of Flo herself speaking on an interview that she did in 1972 in Sarasota. The audio book, as I said, the book and the ebook is available anywhere you can imagine, online and in the corner bookstore. The audio book will be available from Audible, Amazon, and Apple Books.
That's wonderful. Deb, thank you so much for being part of the One Place, Many Voices, Pinellas County History. Congratulations on the trilogy. And more importantly, we thank you so much for bringing and amplifying the voices of Pinellas County. And we look forward to having you back on the show.
Thank you so much. I can't wait to be part of the One Place, Many Voices. That is such an exciting, exciting program. And congratulations to you, Nanette, for that accolade.
For Radio St. Pete and One Place, Many Voices, and producer Tim Valley, we want to thank you all for joining us today.